Welcome to this cozy stream. Actually, it's not a stream. I'm recording it, but I figured I'd crash out over a tweet. You've probably seen this if you're on Twitter at all. It's been floating around the past few days. So I'm not doing this to pick on this guy in particular. I don't have any issue with this guy. Wayne is his name. This is just like a distillation of how a lot of people feel about the moral argument, even though none of them can really back it up. So, yeah, that's what we're doing. We're crashing out over a tweet. We're taking a tweet very seriously. So, he said, "I think it follows straightforwardly from atheism that the universe is cold and uncaring, and we're just animals like all the others, and therefore, there can't possibly be anything like right and wrong, capital R, capital W, and you genuinely are permitted to do whatever you want, and there will be no final accounting. I'm not saying that's right or wrong, I'm just saying that it follows directly from the atheist worldview. And yet no atheists admit to it." And he followed up in a different tweet. He says, "The other thing maybe to say here is that, I don't know, I don't read a lot of obscure academic texts about ethics, so maybe someone has developed a really great explanation for why it doesn't matter that without God, all morality is contingent. But speaking of the new atheists, their attempts to make that argument were simply not very good, not very convincing in my view. So we had a big moment where a bunch of really smart people made the atheist case to the public, really quite convincingly, I think, but on this one point demonstrated that they do not have very satisfying answers." So I thought that was important to understand his views because he said, without God, all morality is contingent. And as you may know, I don't think that's true. Okay, so let's overanalyze this tweet and go line by line. Because there's a lot going on here in this short little space. So I think it follows straightforwardly from atheism that the universe is cold and uncaring. Okay, well, I don't think you really need to be an atheist to see that the universe is, like, you know, broadly speaking, cold and uncaring. In fact, I think if you're making this point, you're kind of admitting that the world doesn't look like it was set up with the welfare of conscious creatures in mind. It's like, you need a God to redeem this world, because without God, if you're just looking at the natural world, if you're just looking at like what's common between naturalists and religious people, you're kind of implying that the evidence is not great that God exists. You're saying, well, on atheism, you would expect a cold and uncaring universe. And if you don't believe in God, it's pretty clear the universe is cold and uncaring. It's like, okay, are we admitting that that's what the natural world kind of looks like? It kind of looks like you'd expect it to look on the hypothesis of indifference. It looks like you would expect it to look if God didn't create it. Because I agree with that. You know, I just don't think it makes the point you think it's making. I mean, if you're like me, you're kind of impressed by some of the arguments for a value selection hypothesis. You just don't think they're pointing towards theism in particular. You just think they're kind of pointing away from the hypothesis of indifference. Because I think theism is just like way too strong. You know, it just makes you expect too much from the world. And when you look at the world, it's just like, this was not created by like a God who cares about sentient beings. I don't understand how you can look at evolutionary history and think that it was. If you can think that, it almost makes me question whether you've really thought about evolutionary history. But anyway, he's saying that it follows from atheism that the universe is cold and uncaring, and I'm sort of granting that, you know, even with this caveat about non-theistic forms of the value selection hypothesis. Oh, and one other side note, I don't think this guy is actually religious, for the record. I'm not like intimately familiar with his religious views, but he said he was an atheist for most of his adult life. I think he still is. He's got a complicated relationship with religion, it would appear. Not exactly unusual. Just trying to let you know where he's coming from. He wants Christianity to be true, or theism to be true. But as far as I know, I don't think he is actually a religious person. He just thinks that this follows from atheism. Okay, so like I said, I'm granting that if atheism is true, you've kind of lost like the main thing that's making the universe not cold and uncaring. So yeah, I don't really object to that part. I just think you're implicitly granting that there's strong evidence against theism because the natural world is indifferent. Then he says, we're just animals like all the others. So that also follows straightforwardly from atheism, apparently, that there are no relevant differences between us and other animals. That's just obviously false. Like, it's not even up for debate. I mean, look at what we're doing right now. We're communicating with language. Like, can other animals do that? Like, can they communicate in the way that we're communicating right now? Like, can other animals reason about things morally? Can they build cars and roads? Can they fly to the moon? Can they do calculus? You know, and I'm not nitpicking here. I'm not just like saying, actually, there are some differences between... It's like, look, we are very obviously not like other animals. And that matters to this argument because some of those differences are relevant differences when it comes to moral philosophy. Okay, so like the fact that we can reason about what we're doing, that we can morally, that makes us moral agents, not mere moral patients. So we're moral patients in the sense that it matters what happens to us. You know, it's like kicking a human is not the same thing as just kicking a pebble. And, you know, other animals are moral patients. You know, kicking a dog is not the same thing as kicking a pebble. But I don't think dogs are engaging in complex moral reasoning. So this is not some kind of arbitrary distinction. You know, this is something that we do in ordinary life. It's something we do in the law. It's reflected in the law of the land. Like, if you're like not mentally competent, that's viewed as a, you know, a factor that needs to be brought under consideration. We don't treat children the same way as we treat adults because we don't see them as like fully responsible because they're not as cognitively developed as adults. Okay, so like these differences between humans and other animals are also present between adults and children. And we treat children differently than we treat adults because they are cognitively limited. And we also do it with adults who are severely cognitively limited. So this is not complicated stuff. I don't think animals in general are moral agents. So there is a huge difference. Like in that debate with Shelley Kagan and William Lane Craig, Craig goes, you know, why is it wrong, curiously, for me to murder, but not lions to murder? You know, or like an animal might forcibly copulate, but we wouldn't say that that animal is a rapist or something. And this is the distinction. Like we're moral agents and they're not. Okay, this is, like I said, this is not some like philosopher's fiction or something. It's reflected in the law. It's common sense. Everybody gets this until you start talking about the moral argument. Yeah, so we're clearly not animals like all the others. Even if God doesn't exist, everything I just said is true. It would be bizarre to treat a one-year-old as morally responsible in the same way that we treat an adult as morally responsible, even if God doesn't exist, because the reason for that has to do with like the cognitive differences between an adult and a toddler. Crazy. And he goes on, and therefore, so because the universe is cold and uncaring, and because we're just animals like all the others, therefore, there can't possibly be anything like right and wrong, capitalized, and you are genuinely permitted to do whatever you want, and there will be no final accounting. Okay, so when he says there can't be anything like right or wrong, and he capitalizes right and wrong, it makes me think he's talking about objective morality, and in a lot of the replies, it doesn't seem like that's what he's talking about, but that's the impression you get from this. So, you know, the majority of philosophers are moral realists. They think morality is real and objective. The majority of philosophers are not theists. Okay, like, it would be surprising, I guess, if, like, philosophy freshmen and, like, F-tier apologists noticed something about metaethics that professional metaethicists didn't notice, as they're like writing textbooks about it. And I don't just mean to appeal to authority, but like you have to realize how dumb this sounds out of the gate for anyone who's familiar with metaethics, which to be fair is not that many people. But it's just like you're making such a radical claim. You are making such a strong radical claim that is completely at odds with the opinions of professional metaethicists. And no one seems to be aware of that. Like, they don't seem to be aware of how unusual these claims are in the context of people who actually think about this on a regular basis, like think deeply about this. They argue about it with their epistemic peers. They write papers and books about it. They teach the subject to kids, like, you know, year after year after year. And then there's someone who just kind of muses about it sometimes, or like listens to some idiot apologist, and they're like, yeah, I think I know more about this than you do. Again, I'm not just trying to appeal to authority. I'm trying to give you a sense of what the field generally thinks. So you should probably know something about why they think what they think. Like, even young earth creationists know more about the subject of evolution than moral argument defenders know about metaethics. That's pathetic. That is sad. If there's a young earth creationist defending their views on the internet, they literally probably know more about evolution and why people believe in it than people who defend the moral argument understand metaethics and why people think morality can be objective, even if God doesn't exist. You realize how pathetic that is, right? Anyway, like, you know, read some Eric Weilenberg, read some Russ Schaefer Landau, like, read some Michael Humer or something. Like, just read something about metaethics, anything, before you just go off like this. So I have a whole playlist about the moral argument. It's not just me droning on. There are many different people, including Christians. Like, in the review of Eric Weilenberg's book, where he talks about the moral argument quite a bit, you know, explicitly or implicitly, what a Christian reviewer had to say about it in Notre Dame Philosophical Reviews was that, you know, who is he talking to? He's like, nobody I know defends this. He's like, yeah, I understand this is popular, like, in, you know, the popular apologetic sphere, but, like, that's not who this book is addressed to. And, like, who are you talking to? Like, nobody thinks this. No religious people I know think this. That's where you are as a defender of the moral argument. Like, other Christians want to disown you, okay? So some of the videos on that playlist are Christians attacking the moral argument. So check out that playlist. It's on my channel. If you want to hear, you know, a defense of objective morality and attack on the moral argument in more depth. But for now, I'm just kind of flagging that this is not like a radical opinion in the field of professional metaethics. He continues, if atheism is true, you are genuinely permitted to do whatever you want, and there will be no final accounting. I mean, I know it's a cliche, but how else are we to interpret something like, there will be no final accounting, so you can just do whatever you want? I mean, like I said, it is a cliche. Like, I don't even want to say it, but seriously, like, you might just be kind of a bad person if you really need, like, the threat of hell and the promise of reward after your death to, like, love your family and do what's right and to, like, have common decency. Like, even, like, would you stop being polite to other people? Like, even just in terms of, like, manners? Like, would you start being really rude? Like, what would you do? I mean, this is quite literally exactly what Jeffrey Dahmer said when, you know, after he converted in prison. He was like, yeah, if there's no God, why wouldn't you just do whatever you want? Because there's no final accounting. Whether or not it really registered to him as wrong what he was doing, he needed that push of, like, there has to be a God who tells him no. There has to be an authority figure who says, you can't do that. And if you do, there will be consequences. It's like, yeah, that makes sense to Jeffrey Dahmer, but you're not Jeffrey Dahmer. Like, most of us are not Jeffrey Dahmer. Why is the final accounting, like, so important to you? It's just, when people bring it up, I don't know how else to interpret it. So he says, I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I'm just saying it follows directly from the atheist worldview, and yet no atheists admit to it. Almost no atheists admit to it. Yeah, because none of it's true. I mean, like, it's. I don't admit to it because it is false. That's why I don't admit to that. I think it's important what he said in this other tweet. Maybe atheists can explain why it doesn't matter that without God, all morality is contingent. So again, that's just false. It is not the case that if there is no God, all morality is contingent. Like, if you're a moral non-naturalist, you probably think these moral truths are necessary. That things like pain is bad, is a necessary truth. Seems pretty plausible to me. I don't see what's so objectionable about that. But yeah, so the moral argument, man, it continues to have some kind of hold on people. And I'm not sure why. Like, I really don't have the intuition that people say they have. Like, they report this intuition that, like, well, without God, how could there be right and wrong? You know, how, like, more radically, how could there be any truth at all? Why would there be anything that is the case? Why would there be anything that is one way and not another way? How would you know if it was raining outside or not, if God didn't exist? And how could there even be a fact of the matter as to whether it was raining outside? I mean, some people seem to actually believe that, like, there would be no truth if God didn't exist, but, you know, more commonly, there would be no moral truth. That seems implausible to me. I think that when I reflect on why is it bad to, like, torture a cat or something, it seems like that comes down to facts about the cat and me and the action. And God doesn't really enter into the picture, and neither does a final accounting. And further, when I reflect on these facts about the cat and me and the action, and then I start, you know, kind of changing some of the variables, imagining different scenarios, it seems pretty plausible that these facts are not dependent on, like, my opinion or my attitudes or what anybody thinks about it, including God. All those facts about the cat and me and the action would still obtain. And it seems like those are the facts you're going to appeal to when explaining to someone why it is wrong to torture a cat. Like, if your go-to explanation for why should I not trap a cat and inflict horrible pain on it for hours and hours for no purpose whatsoever, if your go-to explanation for why not do that is because you will burn in hell or because God said not to do that. By the way, if we're talking about, like, moral epistemology, how do you know God said not to do that? Seems like that's an epistemic problem that is on par with how do I know about moral facts? Yeah, I mean, how do any of us know about moral facts, even if you buy into this, like, divine command theory stuff? It seems like there are going to be epistemological problems for theists and for non-theists. Yeah, I mean, we're pretty much in the same boat, are we not? Like, when it comes to why is it wrong to torture a cat? Like, if you're let's say there's some kid who's, like, a psycho and doesn't understand why that's wrong. Wait, why is this bad? Why am I not supposed to do this? You're going to talk about facts pertaining to the cat and facts pertaining to you and facts about the action. And if none of that works, I can see you saying, well, look, God said not to, and he's going to judge you at some point. You know, you just start threatening the kid, or you say, like, it's illegal and the cops will charge you or something. It's the same exact thing. If you can't reason with them, then you just start threatening them, which is fine. I mean, if you have a cat torturer on your hands and they're not listening to reason, then yeah, threats. I mean, if they're really not reasonable, they won't respond to that either. And that's when you just have to, like, detain them. Yeah, I don't really understand what God is bringing to the table when it comes to why not torture cats. You know, don't, like, can't you see that you're inflicting a lot of pain? You know what pain is, right? It hurts. You're inflicting a lot of pain on this cat. And I'm not saying that gets you to moral objectivism by itself. It's just, if you're explaining why is it wrong to do this, you would just kind of, you would come back to, like, the features of the action and what's happening to the conscious subjects involved. That's what you would do, whether you're a theist or not a theist. It would be deeply concerning if you explain to someone that you shouldn't torture a cat because don't you know that you're causing a lot of pain to the cat, and they just stare at you blankly like you haven't given them any reason at all for not doing what they're doing? That would be concerning. Like, if someone is earnestly reporting, like, I don't have the intuition that pain is bad. I mean, like, your first thought is, okay, I'm talking to some kind of philosopher or something. But if you're not talking to a philosopher and they say, well, I don't have the intuition that pain is bad, you're like, oh, are you like a sociopath or a psychopath or something? Like, you don't have the intuition that pain is bad. Like when I say, well, you shouldn't do that. And they say, why not? And you say, because you're causing a lot of pain to that creature. And they just look at you like you just said, it's Tuesday. You can't torture cats on Tuesday. That's not the day for torturing cats. It's like it really doesn't register as a reason to not do it, that you're causing pain. Like I said, you're either talking to a philosopher or a sociopath. If someone is honestly reporting their intuitions, like, I just don't have the intuition that it is wrong to cause pain, that it's bad to cause pain, that pain is bad. I don't have that intuition. I mean, I don't find that philosophically interesting. I find it psychologically interesting, but do you find it philosophically interesting if someone says, I don't have the intuition that 2 and 2 equal 4? It's like, wow, that really probes to the core of reality when you say that you don't have the intuition that 2 and 2 equal 4. It's like, no, you're just disordered. Like, you don't, there's something that I'm seeing that you're not seeing. Is it interesting philosophically when a blind person is like, I don't see anything? No, not really. Is it philosophically interesting when someone doesn't have like basic mathematical intuitions? No. Do we think that that indicates something true or interesting about math? No. We just think that there's something they don't get. And I kind of feel the same way about moral intuitions. It's like if someone really, like honestly, they're reporting their intuition that they do not view it as a reason at all to not inflict pain. You know, like, oh, pain is bad? No, I don't have that intuition. I don't see why it's bad to cause pain. I mean, if it weren't for philosophers, we would just assume that you were like, you know, you had some kind of disorder. But because of philosophy, I know that I'm probably not talking to a sociopath. I'm talking to someone who has argued themselves into thinking a bunch of silly things. But yeah, people wrap themselves up around the axle with the moral argument. It just doesn't seem like you need another subject or whatever God is to like make it the case that pain is bad. Seems pretty independent of God. But yeah, I brought up this tweet because I think it's a really concise distillation of how a lot of people feel. And some of it is just wrong. Like, we're just animals like all the others. That's not true. That is obviously not true. It doesn't matter if God exists or not. We are not just like other animals. And some of those differences are morally relevant differences. Like, I'm not just bringing up like random differences between humans and other animals. Like, they are clearly relevant, as evidenced by their reflection in the law and in common sense morality, like in how we treat children versus adults. So yeah, if you want to defend the idea that atheism entails that there are no distinctions between moral agents and moral patients, then make that case. Don't just say it's obvious that it's entailed by atheism. Like, what are you thinking exactly? And honestly, I think that you're just not considering what you're saying in very much depth. Like, I just don't think that you're thinking about it. Because what I just said sounds like nonsense. If God doesn't exist, there are no relevant differences between humans and other animals. If you want to make the case that God is necessary for recognizing, understanding differences between moral agents and moral patients, then make that case. Please. Because when William Lane Craig tried to with Shelley Kagan, he folded immediately. Like when Shelley Kagan gave him an answer, he said, yeah, that's a good answer. And then he just changed the subject to something else. So go for it. I would love to hear you try. I would love to hear you make this case. And this is a little nitpicky, but he says almost no atheists admit to it, meaning everything he just said previously. Yeah, atheists don't admit, quote-unquote, that there's no objective right and wrong without God, like lots of them don't, or that we're just animals like all the others, because those things are not true. But it's like, do no atheists admit that there's no final accounting on atheism? That seems like something that atheists admit. There's no final accounting on atheism. No, I'm an atheist, and I believe in the final judgment of Christ. I believe that Christ will resurrect the dead, and there will be a final judgment, and I'm an atheist, of course. What are you talking about? No atheists admit to all of that? Atheists do admit the universe is pretty cold and pretty uncaring. Like, we're pretty much the only manifestations of nature that are not cold and uncaring. We do admit that. I keep saying we. I guess I have my atheist hat on today. Atheists do admit that. They do admit that there's no final accounting. And they do admit that you can do whatever you want, in a sense. You are, like, radically, terrifyingly free. But that's true in any case. I mean, Kierkegaard was an existentialist, and he was a Christian. Like, there are Christian existentialists. This has been noticed by Christians before, the degree of freedom that you have and how scary it is. This is not something that only atheists have noticed. Can you do whatever you want without fear of the law? No. Can you do whatever you want without fear of judgment from your friends and family and your peers? No. Can you do whatever you want without fear of the final judgment of Christ? Yes. Is that something that no atheists admit to, or almost no atheists admit to? I think the atheists admit that. What they don't admit to, or at least what some of them don't admit to, is that there can't be objective right and wrong, because that's asinine, and they don't admit that humans are indistinguishable from other animals, because once again, that is asinine. Like, just think about what you're saying. Think about the words you're saying. Do these sentences actually seem true to you? That's, like, my honest question. It's like, I just feel like an alien sometimes reading this stuff. Like, is this what you actually think? This cannot be what you actually think. But yeah, and like in the other tweet, he says, oh, you know, if God doesn't exist, then all morality is contingent. And I guess that's true on, like, subjectivism. It's not true on, you know, moral naturalism, I don't think. It's not true on moral non-naturalism. So I don't think it's necessarily the case, because those are real possibilities. Just read what secular meta-ethicists have written about this. If you're curious about this possibility, okay? It is definitely not the case that if God doesn't exist, then all morality is contingent. And further, it's not clear that God totally eliminates the contingency of morality. Like, especially if you're a Christian, the rules of conduct, of, like, ethical conduct, seem to have changed from, you know, the old covenant to the new covenant, for one. And it's not just, like, a thought experiment. I only bring that up because it's not just a thought experiment to say, like, well, what if God commanded something else? It's like, well, he did command different things at different times. And if you're a divine command theorist, that's not a problem, but it does seem to make morality a little bit contingent, you know, because it's changing, which seems to be a mark of contingency. So yeah, it seems like on divine command theory, morality could change. And if you're a Christian theist, it seems like it has changed at different points in history. That seems contingent at face value. Whereas the moral non-naturalist does not think morality is contingent. Also, you know, something I just thought of on this final judgment point. It's not like Christians believe that you are really judged by your works and by your conduct and character. You're judged by, I mean, at least according to a lot of Christians, you're judged by weird stuff like your theological beliefs. Like, according to a lot of Christians, you know, you cannot be an atheist and get into heaven. You can't be, like, a non-believer and get into heaven. It does not matter what you did or the way that you are in terms of your moral character. It doesn't really seem like ultimate justice. You know, a lot of Christians, especially throughout history, thought that if you were a heretic, so you're not even an atheist, you just belong to the wrong church, I guess, they don't believe they're going to heaven. Is that really, like, ultimate justice? Is that a final accounting for all the cat torturing you did? Because, like, it seems like you're going to be forgiven for those sins. Like you're like if you're in heaven, you've been forgiven for all of your sins, but there's still some kind of like distinguishing criteria where some people go to eternal torment or non-eternal torment, but you know, some people don't make it into heaven. And it's not because of their own righteousness. I mean, that's not really the Christian story as I understand it. It's not because of your own personal righteousness. So there's still not really like ultimate justice, you know? So just saying, well, there's a final accounting. It's like, yeah, a final accounting of what? Is it like a theology test? I mean, because if you're that type of Christian who thinks that like, well, heretics and Mormons are not going to heaven, it's like, oh, okay. So you actually don't even care about moral conduct and character and works and all the rest of it, because all the people in heaven are just being forgiven for their sins. There's some other like morally irrelevant criteria that are determining that some people don't make it into heaven. So just adding a final accounting into the mix does not really like improve our lot or make the world more just overall. Obviously, there are forms of Christianity where that are not like morally insane, but seems like a lot of Christians who believe in like eternal punishment and this final accounting, this final judgment, it's not like you're being judged and separated by your works, you know, like by your moral conduct and character. There are some passages that in the Bible that seem to indicate that that is how it is. But Christians don't like those passages. Famously, Jesus separated the sheep and the goats by who had the correct view of the Trinity. That was the point of that parable. And, you know, I've said that joke before, and there are always Christians who reply with, like, the Chad meme, or they're just like, this, but unironically. So, yeah, I mean, they embrace the complete moral absurdity of their view. And, I mean, it's just obvious, like, if you were just reading that story, like, if you're reading the New Testament as, like, a neutral agnostic, and you're like, what does this story mean? I don't think that's the conclusion you would come to. I don't think that that's the point of the sheep and the goat story. But according to a lot of Christians, you know, it is just not by works at all. Like, your works just don't have anything to do with how you're separated. So how does that secure ultimate justice, you know, this final accounting? It just doesn't. So I think that's going to be it for our cozy Sunday afternoon stream. If you want to get more into the meat of the moral argument, check out my moral argument playlist. Sorry this wasn't an actual stream. I kind of tried to do that, but I was having some internet problems and some StreamYard problems, so I just recorded it and uploaded it. I wanted to respond to your comments and everything, but sadly, StreamYard is not cooperating. So sorry this wasn't an actual stream. Maybe I'll do it more regularly, because I haven't been writing and recording a lot of content lately for reasons that maybe I will explain sometime soon. But yeah, maybe I could do this more often. Maybe I could just stream and talk to people more directly, because it's hard to find time to write and record and upload. And yeah, so maybe I can just stream a little more often. So thanks for watching. I've been Emerson Green, and I will see you next time.